You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hey everyone, welcome to Page to Stage,
a conversation with theater makers.
We're your hosts.
That's Brian.
And that's Mary.
This episode is part of our series on Six the Musical. In this series, we uncover the process behind the musical through our central question.
What role does history play in the storytelling of Six, a show that uses the history mix as a device?
We hope you enjoy this episode.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shana Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shana Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Hi, my name is Christy Norder. I am the music coordinator for Six. I'm also a woodwind player, musician on Tina Turner, the musical, and the saxophone player. And really excited to be here and talk to you guys about Six and some other stuff.
Welcome. I know we hinted at it before we hit record, but I'm always very excited when we discuss a new role in the industry on the podcast, and we have not yet had a music coordinator on. So I know we've had a few other roles from the music department, but never a music coordinator. So I know we have a ton of questions for you about that. Before researching this role, before we were talking with you or this job, I didn't really understand what the role was and what the responsibilities were until I was looking on Maestro's website. And so I'm wondering if you could give us like the basic functions or maybe just like the basic day-to-day of what you do as a music coordinator. And don't worry, obviously we'll go way more in depth as we continue talking, but just, I guess, to lay the foundation, if you will.
Sure. Very interesting job, and it varies throughout the production. At the beginning, what they call the pre-production, you're hired by the production company. So you're hired by the producers. You work for the producers, but you are the liaison between the American Federation of Music, our union, and our local union, which is 802, with the producers. So I advise them on the contract and the rules. And sometimes it's stuff that's tedious, like, there are rules about how often you can have rehearsal, the minimum call for rehearsal, the kind of warnings that, not warnings, but if you change the schedule, like, it has to be within a certain period of time. So I'm there to protect the rules, to protect the musicians, and also to protect the producers from inadvertently doing something. You know, I also set up payroll. And again, that can be very tricky at the beginning of the show when you're adding rehearsals here and there, filming B-roll, doing all kinds of stuff. And then once the show is pretty much up and running, I'm running payroll and dealing with any small problems, personnel problems, or like the exciting stuff, like, let's say Six, we're going to be on a TV show coming up. Like, that might be part of my job too. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge. But I would do the union paperwork, and I would liaison with whatever TV show that was and with the union contracts in regards to television, videotape, and properly have the band paid and get what they need. And one thing that I will say, you know, at being a union member for like 25 years, is that now that I'm dealing more with contracts, I think a lot of people think the union is so that, you know, people get paid and that the working conditions are good. But I feel, especially in musician union, it's about protection of the actual work, protection of the job. Meaning, if you hire me to play on one song and you pay me, you're like, this song is going to be on a podcast. And I'm like, okay. And you pay me the appropriate rate. If it's not on a union contract, you could take that song and all of a sudden it's in a Marvel movie and you only paid me $100 for it. And it's in a blockbuster movie and I have no protection whatsoever. So the union is kind of it can be tedious, but all of the paperwork goes in to make sure that musicians are paid fairly for the original use of their work. And if it gets reused in different ways, you know, like for example, the commercial that is currently running, we're using stuff from the show, but it's a new use of stuff from the show. So the musicians will get paid for that.
Oh, that's so interesting. A lot of what you're saying reminds me of maybe what a stage manager does to protect the actors in a way.
Yeah. Yep.
And deals with that liaison between the company and union and the rules. So how did you get involved with Six?
It was kind of interesting. So I've always been, you know, I've been a musician on Broadway for like 20 years. And as the industry was starting to change a little bit, you know, it's a very small group of people that are music coordinators on Broadway. And it was pretty much mostly men and white men. And so as we were talking more about diversity, and I had a discussion with Georgia Stitt, who's the founder of Maestro Music. I just said in a conversation, I was like, I wish that I could contract. Like, this is something that I think speaks to my skill sets. I come from a family of accountants, so I already have an affinity for spreadsheets and designing Excel sheets. And, you know, I'm a math nerd. I love contracts. I love details. I love numbers, in addition to loving music and being a part of that. And so I said to Georgia, plus I've been in the pits. I know these musicians. I know what it's like to be there. And I just want a chance at this job, but I don't think that's something that's available to me or most other people. It's such a close-knit thing. And she was like, well, then just be a contractor. And I was like, you can't just be a contractor. Like, poof, I'm a movie star. Like, you don't just call it. It's not like calling your shot. And she was like, well, we'll work on it. So, you know, she made a couple inquiries and I did a few off-Broadway shows. And then out of the blue, I got this email and it was basically the production company for Six. And they were like, we're looking for a music coordinator. And obviously with the nature of Six, it looked good to have a female music coordinator, and that was important to them, you know. And so they had reached out to Georgia Stitt because they wanted her to do it because Toby and Lucy knew Georgia. And she's like, I don't want to be a contractor. This is who you want. And so literally Georgia just handed me the show, which was very sweet. And I'm so appreciative and she's amazing. And I can't speak enough about how awesome Maestro Music is. I'm really fortunate to be a part of it. And they let me teach some classes and I enjoy it. So, and it's directly led to me getting, you know, noticed in the industry and being able to, you know, grow in the skill and learn.
Yeah. I mean, especially like nowadays, I mean, I feel like obviously everything's online, but even now, like connections can be made online and jobs can be booked online. Yeah. Do you recommend for anyone who might be interested or, you know, either in any part of the music department that could be a part of a show, do you recommend that like Maestro might be a good way for networking? Are there other ways that you think might, obviously everyone's path is totally different, so it's hard to pinpoint like exactly what is recommended, but from your experience, do you just think like networking is the best way to get your foot in the door?
It is. And I think that as the more that people hear your name in any industry, the better off you are. I also think it might be a slightly generational thing because I feel like people in their 20s currently, like, you guys grew up with social media, you grew up with, you know, the online profile. And so it tends to come a little easier and sometimes a little too easy that everything in life is put on social media. And I'm a little older, a couple of years older than you guys. And, you know, so for me, my mentors were all, you know, keep your nose down, do a good job. Don't toot your own horn and you'll, you know, progress in this industry. So there really is a fine line between like throwing your name out there and being earnest and like, I'm trying to make connections versus, you know, kind of going crazy off the rails when people and you know, being a little much with people. So yes, to answer your question in a roundabout way, Meister's a great group. It's designed, the directory itself came out of Georgia Stitt and Mary Mitchell Campbell, who's a fabulous MD and an awesome person, human being. So she and Georgia were working on an off-Broadway version of Sweet Charity that starred Sutton Foster, and they wanted an all-female band. And they, because the band was going to be visible, and that was Lee Silverman's vision, like everything is, you know. So they were like, you know, Mary Mitchell was supervising, and I think Georgia was MDing, and they were like, you know, they called me, they're, can you play saxophone? I was like, I'm starting Bronx Tale on Broadway, I can't. And then it was like, huh, well, that was the sax player we knew. And then, you know, and then they realized that there might be one or two women that they knew for every chair, but there's a pipeline issue somewhat, and also a recognition issue. And so Georgia kind of made it, that's where Maestra and the directory came from, was that that's the origin story that, and they were, you know, Georgia has said this a lot. I'm tired of hearing people say, well, I don't know anyone. Well, then you can go look here. Like if you want a female violin player, okay, then go look up violin in the directory, you know, and then their sister or brother group, sibling group is Muse, which is Musicians United for Social Equity. And that's a directory for people of color. And same thing, like if you're like, we need to not just have a band full of white people, you know, that's a really good starting place when you're hiring for musical theater to find people. And for Maestra and for Muse, it's not just the instruments. They will list like, I'm a copyist, I'm an arranger, I'm, you know, I'm an MD, I do this, I do that. So you really could fill a music team with those kinds of jobs as well. It's not just like I play trombone, you know, but it gives people more options. And especially, you know, it's an interesting time on Broadway because for me, there is much to be gained from paying your dues. But at the same time, many of us who have been paying dues over the years don't necessarily get the same shot that others have been given. So there's like that fine line of providing access to people, which is a really amazing thing. But I'm also a firm believer, provide access to the training and apprenticing and mentorship and let people earn their stripes, you know? So for me, it's about early intervention, access. And that's something that I'm really dedicated to.
And I also think just to add on to that is like with the access and the apprentice, you know, idea is that people who go on and who are successful in their role should always, or I believe at least, should always think back and see like, who can I bring on to my team? Like, who can I help and extend the arm to? Because then it's like a cycle where everyone's helping each other within the community. And that's how you bring people up and bring people in, but then still maintain that creative license, if you will.
So in your bio, Christy, you mentioned that you're the only female music coordinator working on Broadway. Is that currently or just...
That was currently, yep.
Okay. And so there has been other females before you, right?
There are two other fabulous female coordinators. One is Talitha Fehr, F-E-H-R, and she is... she mostly deals with tours. So basically, she's the contractor for Troika and a bunch of other like tours, and a show that she was contracting came in for a limited run. But the first person who has straight up music coordinator credits as a woman would be Kim Wirtz, and that show was A Year with Frog and Toad. But the thing about Kim is that she's been doing this behind the scenes for years. You've seen her work constantly, specifically the Tony Awards. She contracts that. The Kennedy Center Honors, she contracts that. So she's, and she also works a lot with Red Press, who is a legendary music coordinator in our field. And so to me, she's really, she's the first, she's the pioneer when we're talking about music theater for music coordinating.
That's
and
amazing.
She's fabulous. She's great.
And just to clarify also, so does every production get a music coordinator, or are there certain productions that may not call for one? Even dialing in a little more specifically, I'm guessing most musicals / all musicals, and then maybe plays that have live musicians?
Yes. So the contract's kind of weird. Some of it has to do with that this contract was written, 75 years ago. I don't even know when the first Broadway that'll be something I'll look up later. The first Broadway CBA. There's language in it that talks about the inside contractor, like which we call the in-house contractor, which is a person who is in the band, and they are the ones that run the day-to-day. They make sure that the subs are there. They make sure the regulars are there on time. They keep track of subs and do the basic payroll and then kick it up to the music coordinator. The music coordinator job was out of necessity that somebody needed to keep track of all of these things. But it's really funny because if you ask producers sometimes what a coordinator does, they're like, I don't know, I just know I need one. And so it's been kind of a funny situation. But yeah, there are a few shows that don't have an outside coordinator, but then it has to fall on somebody. And then with plays, like I think that, there was something recently where there was a pianist on stage, but it was a play and that had a music coordinator.
If the actor themselves were playing a la like Bandstand, of course they had a musical or
right.
Something that where it's a play with music.
Right.
Do you also have a music coordinator?
Yeah, it's funny because I originated Bandstand when it was a paper mill and I couldn't do it on Broadway because I was doing Bronx Tale, but I was in the pit, not on the stage. Depending on the different rules, you get into, equity. If they're playing on stage, they have to be members of our union as well. And so they kind of get paid like a variation of both and, extra rules and.
So the actor, if they're playing like piano, they have to be a member of your union.
Yeah. Cause they're a musician on stage.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm curious how this role integrates with the other roles in the music department, like a music director,
sure.
Arranger, those kinds, a supervisor even.
Yeah.
Especially because the producers hired you.
Yeah.
The yes. director or the creative team as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but many times the supervisor or the MD or sometimes the composer will request the coordinator that they're comfortable working with. And so there might be a coordinator who always does so-and-so's shows. Sondheim. Like, I'll do all Sondheim shows. Like, whatever. And so some of that is, but also there are some producers that are like, well, I prefer to work with this person. So it is who again, with the networking and, Six took a chance on me, which I'm very, very appreciative. And I find it really like my very first chair on Broadway. That was my chair. It was my show. It was In the Heights. And that was a Kevin McCullum song or show as producer. And then for Six to be my first Broadway credit as a music coordinator, like to me, and it's also a Kevin McCullum show, like it felt right. It sort of felt like it was somebody, for me, like those kinds of experiences are really important. And I'm a very nostalgic person and I'm a very like appreciative. And so it just seemed kind of poetic that it was Kevin on both shows. You know, and yeah, and he's amazing at the business. He's just a very, obviously, I mean, he's had a couple shows that did okay.
I mean, and very apropos that he was our first guest for the series.
Yeah. Oh, he's so much fun too. He's a really great speaker. Yeah.
So I know also you said earlier when you were introducing yourself that you play sax for Tina over at Tina. It is possible to be a contractor for one show, but not necessarily play for that show.
Yeah. As the music coordinator, you can. Red Press, for years, he was a music coordinator, the in-house contractor, and the Reed One player on Chicago for years. So it's possible.
Very busy.
Yes. And was contracting, because I can contract as many shows as I'm offered or want to do. You're not limited to coordinating on one.
How does that work from a time management standpoint?
I'll let you know in a couple months.
Right, because I mean, Tina was already open
right
when you guys started previews. So yeah. What does that look like when they went into tech and then once they went into performances themselves? Six that I'm speaking.
Yeah,
towards.
The best part of Six's location is that there is a back cross between the hotel. So if you come out of Tina Turner stage door and turn right, the Edison Hotel, I think, has a walkthrough. And then you turn left coming off, you basically cut through a hotel lobby and come out on the left. So I can get from one theater to the next in about 3 minutes, which was helpful during that time. As I'm learning how to do things, I'm trying not to overbook myself. Because as a musician, I try to do as many gigs as possible and go running from gig to gig to gig. But this, I tried to be patient and not worry about taking off from Tina now and again. You know, it's not worth a little extra money to play the show. What's more important is that I focus and really learn how to do this job the right way. But there are times, because I play a lot during Tina Turner, but there are definitely some like 10-minute periods where the horns don't do anything. And I've gotten really good at multitasking. Like, I definitely had an emergency at an off-Broadway show I was contracting while I was, you know, in one of those breaks, and basically got like the bass chair covered while I was like in the pit for Tina, which was kind of fun. But yeah, you have to learn how to keep a bunch of plates spinning, and that it is really important. Time management is something that I know how I used to do it. And now that we've been gone for a year and a half, it's like I'm brushing off the cobwebs right now, but it's okay. Happy to do it. Happy to have the work. It can be a lot. But again, it depends on how things line up. You know, in the spring I have a couple of things, and of course they lined up exactly at the same time. So that might be a very stressful period up through, you know, previews through opening. And then once opening is over, like, okay, I think everything's cool. I just got to make sure payroll is okay. And, you know, and deal with any pop-ups or.
After the show has opened, you're just maintaining the payroll. You no longer have to go in.
Yes.
To the theater physically. It can all be done remotely.
It can all be done remotely, but I also believe in being present and because it's not just, you know, I interact a lot with production stage manager, like we liaison the sound team, the sound guys, the crew, props, you know, I deal with if there's an issue, like a six, they're playing instruments that they had special instruments like painted or made for the show. You know, they're not playing their own instruments, which is unusual, but then that becomes property of the theater, and that therefore it falls under local ones, the prop guys, because it's considered a prop. And so, you know, like even silly things like, oh, here's a great example. So Six utilizes confetti at the end of the show, there's a big confetti drop and it's Broadway. So they're like, we want a big confetti drop. You know, we have keyboard on stage and we have a keyboard programmer who is also the person who's responsible for getting us our equipment and either purchasing it or renting it. And depending on the show. And he was like, he's a friend of mine. His name is Randy Cohen. And he programs everything. He's kind of an interesting person. You guys might want to talk to him at some point. He was right off the bat was like, I don't like where this is headed with the keyboard. And I was like, what are you? Cause that's his job. You know, I'm like, confetti, that sounds awesome. He's like, that sounds like a nightmare. Cause it's going to get down in the keys and it's going to break the keyboard. And so we're going to have to swap out the keyboards. And so like part of his headache was then figuring out a budget and how often do they have to take the keyboard into the shop? What will that cost? So because of confetti, which is the funniest thing to me, but these are the kinds of details that you could never in a million years predict or be like, what do you do for a living? I prevent confetti from messing up a keyboard. It's a,
yeah, but it's also, you know, something that, like, if that role didn't exist, like who would have known to have like thought of that pre, like to prevent it, you know, to, yeah, or not to prevent it, because obviously you can't prevent it, but sure, to look out for it, to hopefully make sure that there aren't any,
yeah,
continuing interruptions. That's crazy.
Yeah. And I think the job also, it evolves on every show is different. And I think one of the best skills is to be a problem solver. So, you know, if you walk in and the stage manager comes running up to you and is like, we have this huge issue because, and you're like I can't even think of a good example right now, but, you know, like, oh, we need the dressing room because we have a, you know, we have a dog in the show now or something. And you're like, okay. And so rather than be like, you know, so it's like, well, that's what the show's needs, so let's figure out a way to do it. And that's, you know, the challenge and the fun and sometimes the stress of like, okay, let's just make it happen, you know, we'll figure it out.
What is something that you anticipated, or what is something that you may have wanted from yourself as a music coordinator, having been in the pit before? You know, what is something that you look for, yeah, in a music coordinator that you wanted to then employ as a music coordinator?
That's a great question. To me, music is very important. So musical skill is very important. But another thing that I strongly believe in is, you know, doing good work, being professional, and holding our behaviors and to a higher standard. And so, you know, I'm usually still like one of the only women in the pit and one of the only women in the reed section. And so although I have a tough skin, at a certain point I started realizing like, I need to step up and say to people like, no, and not because I don't want to hear you say something like that in a pit, but because the 20-year-old who wants to be like me someday, I'm setting her up for failure by not addressing these problems and just going along with it. And it's a different world right now. So one of the things that I really wanted for myself is to never have any musician feel the way that I have felt sometimes in pits. And but that's not to say like I've got my whole career, like there have been moments, you know, but for me, I really wanted to make sure that everyone can go to work, do a good job, respect each other and move on. You don't have to be best friends, but you also, you know, need to treat everyone well. You know, I have to hold myself to the same, you know, we all make mistakes and we also, you know, you need to leave room for mistakes, but, you know, we can try to make it better. We can try to make people feel more welcome. And hopefully, you know, we can continue to do that. But as I said before, people need to pay dues. People need to do the hard work. But I, you know, that access for me is really important in that I'm willing to take time and help somebody, train somebody, mentor somebody, you know, jump on the phone. I'm part of Muse has a mentoring program right now. So I'm part of Muse's mentoring program. And there's a woodwind doubler. We were just talking today because he wanted my advice on something. He's a great guy. And we met a few weeks ago and we just talk, you know, he's like going on tour with a show, and he, you know, he's doing all the right things. He just needs a little help and advice, and, you know, and I'm happy to do it, because that's how we grow as musicians. We've always apprenticed. I mean, even somebody like Mozart, like, they apprenticed. They learned the business from someone who had done it before and showed them the way. That's what we do. And so when we get away from that, we're kind of destroying the lineage of our tradition.
So I'm wondering, how is Six different from any of the other projects that you've worked on as music coordinator?
Well, it's the only Broadway show so far, although I have another one coming up. So I'm still very, in the scheme of things, I'm still very new at coordinating. So I've done a lot of one-off things, a lot of streaming things, and some, you know, like galas and a few off-Broadway shows. And I'm currently working on another off-Broadway show that's also coming in March called The Suffragists. That is announced, The Suffragists, Shana Taub's new musical, Andrew Grody's the MD. I've been working on that for a while. Oh, we did get sidetracked because I tend to blab, sorry. Just ask Georgia Stitch, she knows. But one thing that I do in the pre-production part of my job is look at talent and look at options. So when you were asking before how I work with the other people, if the supervisor or the, you know, whoever wants to be involved in, okay, it's time to pick a band. Some people are very hands-off. They're like, just get me a band. You know, we need 7 people. These are the chairs. This is what I'm looking for. You know, make a list. That's fine. Some people are like, I want you to hire this person, this person, this person, but I don't know anyone for this chair. And some people want it to be a real collaborative process. So, you know, there's phone calls and, you know, like Google Docs and links to bios and all kinds of stuff.
And who's generally in the room with you, or who's having those conversations with you? Is it including the producer as well as everyone on the music department?
The producer rarely gets involved with personnel. They would be the high, like, coordinator. They would want to say, and who the in-house coordinator was. They would probably want, you know, obviously they get to hire supervisors, orchestrators, all that. But when it comes down to just the band, unless there's someone that they have had a problem with on one of their productions or something like that, I think that they defer to the music team. You know, but that's definitely changed in the industry. And I do know that, you know, way back in the day, music coordinators could just be like, I'll get your band. And they would, this is your band. Nowadays, the music coordinators, they do exactly what they're asked to do. And it's, but I think it's cool because it brings in more different, you know, it gives more access and different access instead of, these are my guys. I always call my guys, you know, so it's, I get both sides of it. Cause like for people that loyally hire me over the years, like I understand wanting to be loyal to good workers, but how's a new person supposed to break in?
Especially since looking at Six, you know, having gotten so far to the finish line, if you will, before everything shut down, what are you doing now, especially since all the announcements have been made, hopefully that we're able to, you know, move forward with all those intended dates, of course, but what are you doing now to prepare for the opening in a few weeks, a few months?
Back and forth with the supervisor, a lot with the production stage manager and the general manager who works with under the producers. You know, I'm really lucky that John Gendron and Susie Brandt, John's a GM and I believe Susie's associate GM, they're fabulous. They're really good to work for, and they also understand that, you know, this is my first Broadway show. So they have been very cool. You know, I'm also the kind of person that I won't BS. Like, I either know something or I don't. And if I don't, I'll just say, hey, give me a day to figure it out. I'll go talk to somebody. So they've been very patient, and I'm probably being harder on myself than I need to be, but you know, there will be mistakes and it's fine. We all make mistakes. But they work for Kevin and they're fantastic and a really great bunch.
I think it's so interesting that company managers generate payroll for the actors, but then you're generating payroll for the musicians. And
right.
So
then it goes to the house manager, mm-hmm. because, that goes through the same thing. The musicians get paid by the theater owners.
Oh.
So the payroll goes to the house manager. So when I get a check for Tina, it's the Niederlanders.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's not Tina. Yeah.
Mary, I think it's time for our lightning round.
Yeah, let's do it.
No, I know. We're going to rename it. We're going to rename it for the next series because we've been calling it lightning round and we get that response every single time.
Really, we're not timing.
Mary, you want to kick us off?
Yes. What is one thing in the theater industry that confuses you?
Some traditions. Because most rules, it's the history of it. You'll look in a contract and you'll be like, well, that's odd. Why do they, why is this in the contract? And there's always a good story as to why. Well, because at Phantom, somebody so-and-so did this. And so now we have a rule for it.
What are three adjectives that describe your ideal working environment?
Fun, professional, respectful.
I know we're not going to respond, but I will just say I'm pretty sure, I'm like 95% sure that everyone that we've talked to from Six has included fun in this.
Yeah.
Just a little tidbit. I'll have to pull the audio, clip it together. Is there something in your process that you find unique to you?
For hobbies, I am a do-it-yourself, home improvement projects. So I am sort of in my process, I joke around with friends that I'm the contracting contractor, and I'm the only contracting contractor. So I can redo your kitchen for you while hiring you a band and running payroll. And I believe I'm the only music coordinator who can do that. I'll stand by that. Bring it on, everybody else.
Our next question was, what is one hobby that you have outside of the theater? So...
that would be it. And also my love of the Buffalo Bills, which is more of a lifestyle, I think, not a hobby.
What is one job in the theater industry that you would trade jobs with for 1 week?
Definitely crew, carpenters, or something. I'd love to. I've already made friends with the head carpenter at the Tina show. Terry, he's great.
Do you have any books or resources that you find helpful to you in your process?
It's funny you should say that because I have an earmarked copy right now, hot off the presses from 6 years ago. This is the 802 collective bargaining agreement. This is literally the entire Broadway contract between the League of Producers, Disney, and Local 802. That is the Bible because most of the answers are there. Yeah, it really is. And I have it on my computer, on my iPad. I have it, in paper copies. I have one in my locker. I have one on my desk and I spread them around. It's fun. A little light reading.
a little train, just each read. Yeah. There you go. Okay, cool. So our last question is, what's your favorite part of the development process of a new show?
I'm going to answer it as a player and then I'm going to answer it as a coordinator because I think those are two different things. So as a player, normally I get in the room when the score is completed because I'm not a composer or an arranger. So people have been working on it. They've been working on the story. They've been working on, writing the songs and the lyrics and putting it all together. And that very first day after, because usually the band rehearses first for a few days and then there's a zits probe. And that's the moment where the full orchestrations are played and these singers who have been rehearsing to just a piano and everybody just goes, oh, wow. Because it's just you can feel it. And, it's that one moment where everyone's just shocked. I never knew it could be this, and that to me is amazing. I think as a coordinator, while I enjoy all those moments, I feel like once the band is okay, opening night, it's we made it. We're good. We're going to continue. Everything's great and things are working and we can just get down to business now through all the tough stuff.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So gonna link to Maestra on our show notes. We'll include it on our social. But are there other places that you want to shout out that our listeners can find you on social?
I mean, I have my own, which I'm happy to send you guys, like my Twitter and Facebook and.
Cool.
I ditched my MySpace, Insta, whatever the kids. I have a 17-year-old daughter. She's like, oh my God, it's not funny. Don't like nobody Facebooks. I'm like, yeah, we do. We do it proudly.
You know what? Even the 20-year-olds do.
We do.
Right? I don't even think I had a MySpace, but it's okay.
I truly think that like my age, I just turned 25, and I think that my age is like that last group that may still use Facebook.
The last
Facebook.
Holdout.
We're holding out for Facebook. And yeah. Some people are like on the fence and they're like, you still use that? You sent me a message. Thank you so much for coming on here, though. I absolutely loved hearing you speak about a role that really, when I woke up this morning, I knew nothing about. I had to ask my fiance, I go, Stan, what is a music coordinator? And like, tell me the ones that you've worked with in the past, like what they do. Yeah. So I'm really, really happy that we got you on here to talk about this.
Well, I'm so appreciative that you guys asked.
Thank you. This was great. I'm very excited for theater to come back, obviously.
And for a great finale to our 6 series.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. I'm so excited.
Thanks everyone for listening to this episode of Page to Stage. To keep up with us, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Page to Stage Podcast.
If you enjoyed this conversation, we have other episodes with theater makers from Six the Musical.
Check them out.
Until next time.
That's Brian.
That's Mary.
We'll see you later.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.